Welcome, everybody. We're going to do just a little bit of introduction here and then opening prayer and then kind of dive right in to the week. So thanks for being here today. As Sharon mentioned, my name is Ron Rood and been campus pastor for the last 17 years, but just retired. So trying to figure that out, and it's a good thing. I'm here this week with my wife, Nancy. Wave your hands. And she's retiring this month from Habitat for Humanity, where she's been working for 17 years as well. And we also have one of our daughters here, Jen, and her partner, her spouse, Deb, and they live in Tacoma, Washington. Anybody have any connections to PLU, Pacific Lutheran University? Jen is the campus pastor there. And for a while, I think we were the only daughter, dad, pastors in the ELCA in campus ministry. So that's kind of neat. And Deb is a librarian in, is it Port Orchard? Port Orchard, about 40 minutes outside of Tacoma. So it's good to have our family time here this week. Just a little bit about me before we kind of get here. These are some of my interests. Hiking, the natural sciences, music, presidential history. Anybody taken any OLLI courses through your universities? Osher Lifelong Learning Institute? Yeah, it's through universities all around the country out into the community that people take. So I teach some presidential history. That's kind of my other avocation. A recent class was called Presidential History, the Good, Bad, and Ugly. And we've got it all. And of course, traveling, one of the fun things about being a campus pastor is you get spring break trips. So the first two columns were trips that I took students on. The left column was, we did kind of construction projects in those places. The middle one was more learning and learning culture and so forth. The trip to Thailand in 2016, we had a group of 16 go there. We were hosted by Muslim friends from Arizona and their contacts in Thailand. And together, some Lutherans and some Muslims were studying Buddhism in Thailand. So that was really fun. And on my own, some of these trips here. And in a couple weeks, Nancy and I are going to Scotland to celebrate our retirements and to celebrate our wedding anniversary. So travel is fun. It's pretty neat. Written a couple of books on the natural sciences, Christian theology, and sustainability, which are kind of what we're going to be talking about this week. And if I had not been a pastor, I think I would have liked to have been a history professor, a barber, or a drummer. I played the drums in a rock and roll band in high school and college and in church bands kind of off and on over the years. But I've been able to do all these as avocations, so that's been fun. So that's just a little bit about me. We'll move on here. This is kind of how the week is going to look. Today, looking at a big picture, God's ancient and vast universe. And here's the verse to memorize. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And make sure you underline this word. That's a possessive word, right? Tomorrow we're going to look at this thing called sin. How does that affect things? Wednesday, these new religions, Christianity, Judaism, were kind of responses to a brokenness within our species. Thursday, we'll look at the Reformation and suggest that it may be time for a new Reformation. And then finally on Friday, we'll tie a number of things together, including how do we live in this world as Christians. So that's a little bit of what we're about. Let's open with prayer.
Lord, gather us in prayer. During this special week at Holden Village, open our eyes, ears, and hearts. Marinate our souls with the light and wisdom of this verdant habitation, this ecological home in the Cascade Mountains. You call each of us to be here. Inspire every endeavor, including this class, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. So, we dive in, have you ever thought about how recent and brand new these religions are? Really, they're modern baby religions. And when I say this, I put it in the context of a much larger story. This universe has been here for about 13.7 billion years. That's a long time that God has been creating and engaging and inspiring and loving and forgiving and challenging and working with all that is seen and unseen. And for the first 9 billion years or so, our sun and solar system and planet weren't even here. So God's been busy before we even had a chance to arrive on the scene. The earth goes around the sun once a year, so the earth has gone around the sun about 4.6 billion times, right? About 3.8 billion years ago, something pretty amazing happened on this planet, and I happen to believe there's life all over the universe, but I don't think we'll ever know. But life seemed to emerge on this planet. How did non-life become life? Wow, that's quite a jump. And for about 3 billion years, this life was busy trying to figure out how to live and also creating our atmosphere, especially oxygen, which a lot of creatures, including us, sort of benefit from today. About 660 million years, life had figured out how to cooperate enough to become multiple cell life. That was quite an amazing jump. If we had been walking around these mountains about 400 million years ago, we would have been walking on sterile ground. There was no plant, no animal life. Life was only in the oceans. So we went up to Heart Lake yesterday, and this verdant valley, it would have been sterile rock, kind of like a moonscape. But about 395 million years ago, life decided to try to move on to land. And that was quite an amazing thing. And think of the things that life had to do in order to move on to land. It had to figure out how to navigate gravity that was a little bit different on land. Had to figure out how to get around, how to get food, how to digest food, how to reproduce. An egg in the ocean can have just a fine mucus around it, but on land it needs a hard shell. All these kind of things. About 295 million years ago, there seemed to have been reptiles and dinosaurs around. And I guess there's some kind of debate as to whether a dinosaur is a reptile. Some people say yes, some people say no. About 195 million years ago, mammals seem to have emerged, and mammals are creatures with mammaries. That's where the name comes from, through live births, have a backbone, have hair or fur rather than scales and that kind of thing, and need to breathe oxygen. Something happened about 65 million years ago. A big asteroid hit the Yucatan Peninsula, 6 miles wide, and sent debris up into the atmosphere, blocking the sun. A lot of species, about 70% of the species, died, as well as all kinds of carbon dioxide was released that had been safely sequestered in the ocean floor, in the limestone of the ocean floor, and now was up into the atmosphere. And that's a bad thing. And that's why our scientists in so many different fields are so concerned about rising levels of carbon dioxide. It's not a good thing. And the Earth will recover, but it took a few million years. That particular asteroid wiped out the dinosaurs. Yeah, this is why we're concerned about this. And except for some dinosaurs that evolved into some creatures who are around today, do you know what those are?
Birds.
Yeah. Mammals seem to have emerged, larger mammals, about 60 million years ago. we were on the Oregon coast, was it last summer, Nancy, for vacation, or the summer before? And as you're walking along some of the trails, you can see some mammals, whales, otters, sea lions, dolphins, and others. Have you ever wondered why there are mammals in the ocean? Apparently about 50 million years ago, some land mammals began to evolve back into the ocean, probably finding food sources. And so these are mammals. They have hair or fur. They have backbones. They have live births. They have mammaries. They need oxygen. So they have to come up for air, including some whales that can be underwater for an hour, but they have to come up and take a breath and then go back down. These are the mammals that swim. The bat is really the only mammal that flies. There are about 1,200 species. 28 live in Arizona, where we live. I don't know how many live in this part of the country. Anybody know? But there are a lot of bats. Some are tiny, like an inch wingspan. And some have several feet, like a couple feet of wingspan. Primates, I guess there are about 250 primates left. Our immediate predecessor species, Australopithecus, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, seem to have been around for about 3 to 4 million years ago, plus about 13 other cousins. Our species, Homo sapiens, seem to have been around for about 200,000 years, including a more modern version for about 70,000, modern meaning some language ability, new language abilities, symbolic thinking, some of those things. So in the Creator's house, there are many dwelling places. Remember, the Creator's house is not just heaven. We tend to use this verse at funerals. But it's wherever the reign of God is. And so there are about 20 million dwelling places for the 20 million species on this planet. And we as humans get one of those dwelling places. And so the question is, what kind of housemates are we? But we have been invited to be here too. So, when you think about it, these are baby religions. When you think of how long God's story has been going on. But not only is God's story of life and of the universe ancient, it is also vast. I just guessed that this was our... That's our Milky Way galaxy that has about 200 billion stars, which are suns, and many of them have planets around them, which are, that's a solar system. The distances are pretty vast. The nearest star to us, let's say it's this one, is 4.2 light years away, which is about 24 trillion miles. That's a long ways. If it's going to take us about 7 months to get to Mars, 7 months, how long do you think it'll take us to get to the nearest star or solar system to ours, going as fast as we know how to go today? Well, not 7 months, not 7 years, not even 70 years, but 30,000 years to get to the nearest solar system to ours, one way. Well, it turns out that solar system, Proxima Centauri, doesn't have any planets. So the next nearest is 2.5 times farther. So if it takes 30,000 years, 2.5 times, 75,000 years to get to the nearest solar system to ours that has planets. That's kind of an interesting feature, isn't it? So I hope I don't step on anybody's toes here, but Star Trek, I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't know, this might step on some toes to talk about underachieving in a plot line. Yeah, we're going to go to other solar systems and stars and fight entertaining wars.
But that was a long time ago.
What was? Star Wars, yeah.
Far,
far, yeah, that's right, that's right. And then, this is our Milky Way galaxy. There we are. I guess astronomers now are saying there maybe are a trillion galaxies. Some with as few as 100,000 stars or suns or planets or solar systems, and some with several trillion suns or stars or solar systems. But the distances there, the nearest galaxy to us is Andromeda. So if the nearest star to us is 4.2 light years away, and that'll take 30,000 years to get there, the nearest galaxy to us is 2.5 million light years away. And I don't even know what the math of that is. 24 trillion times 2.5 million. That's how many miles away. So, Battlestar Galactica. Oh, dear. I happen to think there's life all over the universe, but I don't think we'll ever know it. The distances just are so great. And to be able to transport the physicality of a person, maybe we'll get some robots going someplace, but the physicality of creatures like us, I don't know. So this is an ancient and this is a vast story that we have been invited to be a part of. And I think as Christians, we happen to believe that God is sort of in, under, with, and over, and around, and through this whole story. It's hard to know what that means, other than it's a faith statement. And it's a pretty amazing story. Oh, anybody heard of multi-universe theory? That says there's not just our own universe, but there may be other universes. So here we are. Talk about feeling small. Some people, when they feel small, that's a depressing thing. Albert Camus, at any street corner, the feeling of absurdity can strike any person in the face. Was he a nihilist? Is that what he's kind of known for? Or an absurdist, or something like that? But other people, like Rabbi Abraham Heschel, says wonder or radical amazement is the chief characteristic of the religious person's attitude toward history and nature. Do you find yourself leaning towards one or the other when you think about your smallness? Depends on the day, okay. I think I've always leaned this direction, and I don't know why. I don't think it's a choice. I just kind of think it's pretty fascinating that this is a big place and I'm small, but I get to be a part of it. But I think it disturbs some people. I don't know. On some days. So 20 million species in the Creator's household on this particular planet. Look at all the different ways that critters get around. Slinking, sliding, burrowing, hitching a ride, creep, crawl, walk, dart, gallop, leap, flap their wings, beat their wings, soar, hover, swim, float, paddle, jet, launch. A lot of ways to get around. And think of all the different ways that people eat. Or not people, creatures eat. Maybe we do some of these. Grip, grab, spear, drill, snatch, chop, crunch, munch, cut, swallow whole, suck through tongues, filter, shoot lethal juices. Just a variety of ways that the members of God's household do simple things like eating, or maybe they're complex things like eating and digesting. So within this big picture, what does it mean, to be human? Well, we're mammals too. That means we have mammaries and do live births and hair or fur need oxygen. We're actually placental mammals, have a placenta. There's also marsupials. The baby is born at about the size of a peanut and then crawls into the mama's pouch and does the rest of their growing inside the pouch. I think on our continent, the opossum is the only marsupial, I believe. But there's others. And then there are some called monotremes that are mammaries, anteaters, platypus. They have mammaries, but they have no nipples or breasts. So how do you think their babies get milk? I guess it just kind of oozes out of the skin and fur, and the baby licks it up. But that's an interesting variation. And of course, Jesus was a placental mammal of the species Homo sapiens. We're also primates. Primate is a word we've given ourselves because we think we're primary. And if other animals are similar to us, we'll call them primates too. The stories in Genesis have some interesting insights, I think, into our particular species. The oldest creation story actually in Genesis 2. Then Yahweh formed the Adam from the dust of the Adama. You can see the connection from between those two words. Anybody been to the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago? Isn't that a great museum? They have a display called Underground Adventure. Basically, they've taken like a square foot of soil and blown it up 100 times, and you kind of walk through this display then. And so a worm that's normally an inch long is about 12 feet long, and a little mite that's microscopic is now this big, and you get a feeling that the soil is just filled with life, which it is. So somehow these storytellers had a sense of that. They could see the life in the soil and wanted to portray the human creature as coming from the soil. All kinds of life. It's interesting that my body is made up of trillions of microbiota. But only about 10% of those cells are me, are Ron. And the other 80% or so are other organisms. So really, I'm a colony of organisms. So what does it mean to be me if only 20% of me is me? And really, I'm part of a biota. I don't know if that's the right word, but that's pretty amazing. And every other creature is that way too. Which raises an interesting question about space travel. We live in a biosphere, and microbes are in us and on us, and we like to use a little hand sanitizer. And of the trillions of microbes on me, I'll kill maybe a few billion for a minute or two. And you should do that if you really are been in some bad things. But and then not only on us and in us, but we're breathing in microbes all the time and in and out. This place is just all swarming with living things. So when you go out into space, I've wondered this, you need a sterile environment when you go in a spaceship. And how do you bring along this biosphere? I don't know how you do that. You can have the things in you and on you, but how is that going to... Apparently we can be out there for a year or maybe two or three, but longer than that, I don't know the answer. Maybe some biologists here know what the answer to that will be. And then when you think about, we're made up of zillions of atoms, right? And those are jumping around between us all the time. And an atom is, about 99.9% empty space, right? You got the nucleus with protons and neutrons and leptons and quarks and all kinds of things in the nucleus, and then some electrons going around, but in between there's just empty space. So really, we're 99.9% empty space. And so I think this is right. Glenn, you've explained this to me, but I don't know if I've always gotten it right. He's a chemical engineering professor. But when I touch this, I think it's my electrons are kind of pushing against this rock's electrons, and it makes it feel solid. But really, we're both empty space. So what does it mean to be human? Yeah, yeah. It's an incredible thing. And then there's the second creation story, which is in Genesis 1. On the sixth day, there's this very interesting sentence here, where after Elohim, God has made all these creatures, then says, now let us make humankind in our image. And people have wondered, well, who's us? Who's our? And who's God talking to? And I think I learned in seminary that the us and our might be the Trinity, but this is a Hebrew text. I don't know if that quite fits. Or some kind of heavenly court of some kind. Or maybe it's just a literary device, the royal we. You know, let us do this. I wonder if, and I don't know what these storytellers were getting at, but maybe they're having it, they put into God's mouth the words in order to say, okay, that God is speaking to the other creatures that have already been made and saying, okay, now this next creature, let's make in our image. And so we are made in the image of God and in the image of all other creatures. And we forget either at our peril, and I think that's the problem. We've forgotten one or the other or both. And I happen to think that every creature is made in the image of both God and all other creatures. That's just a belief. As humans, we're developed in some ways. We're underdeveloped in some other ways. We can't fly or live under the sea. We're clumsy on our feet compared to a mountain goat or mule. We have terrible hand-eye coordination compared to a squirrel. We're faster than a cow, but slower than a cheetah. So a cheetah can go 60 miles an hour, a gazelle 40 miles an hour. Who wins? Well, the cheetah can go 60 miles an hour, but for only 60 seconds. And pretty straight. And if it does not catch what it's chasing in those 60 seconds, it is so exhausted it can hardly stand. And if they have several misses, they can even be too exhausted to catch food for several days or longer. A gazelle only goes 40 miles an hour, but they zigzag and they can run forever. So it depends. We, by the way, we can run distances pretty well compared to many species, go for a long time. Anybody done a marathon?
Training for my first.
Way to go. Yes. And there are such things as 100Ks, right? Ultra marathons, which would be about 66 miles. 26 is a regular or longer. So, anyway, but we can't, I don't think we can, what do we run, 20 miles an hour, 15, the fastest? I don't know.
Depends on the person.
Yeah.
If you walk at a brisk speed, that's about 4 miles an hour.
Walking.
So running is, you know, about 4 to 6 miles an hour.
Okay. Yeah. Nancy's dad ran from age 50 to age 72. His motto was, he ran 2 or 3 marathons. His motto was, I like to start off slow and then taper off. We can't change color like a fish or tree toad or a chameleon, can't store water like some of these folks here. A Bactrian camel can go, I think, 10 months without water. We can go maybe, 5 days? 4 or 5 days? And eyesight and smell. But what we have is sufficient for being human. That's our only job, to be human. And you can see how our species probably started in Africa and then started to move around the world 40,000 years ago. Coming to our continent, I think they're thinking maybe 15 to 17,000 years ago, so pretty late in the Homo sapiens story. But other predecessor species also moved around, as well as other plants and animals and so forth, this earth. Migration has happened in many ways, to different parts, and in different waves too, not all at once. And migration has been sort of back and forth and stops and starts and circle around but spread around. And sometimes migration was prompted by climate changes and ice age sheets. There have been about 23 ice ages coming and going for the last 2.5 million years. It's because I guess the Earth wobbles as it spins, and sometimes it's closer and sometimes farther away from the sun or the way the sun hits it, and it's about a 40,000 year cycle. It's kind of like your tire. If it's out of balance, the Earth is out of balance that way. Would someone like to read this? This is just kind of an interesting way to think about diversity in our species. Anybody just want to read that out loud for us? Okay.
Great diversity among Homo sapiens. Tens of thousands of ways to be human, including a variety of economic systems, religious and philosophical creeds, sexual roles, gender identities, and family structures. Way of life for one culture may involve hunting and fishing, and for another, gathering edible boars and wild berries. Certain environments coax some people to plant vegetables, large mammals and erect buildings, and others to harvest wild grain and domesticate animals, like llamas, cows, and chickens. Nomadic people live in the lowlands during winter and in the upper altitudes through summer. Most cultures lean toward patriarchal expressions of authority and lineage, but others, such as Hopi, Iroquois, and Huron, lean toward the matriarchal. It is normative for one group depends on how well their way of living complements God's garden in their locale. When it doesn't, they move on or die.
So there's this ancient universe and a vast universe. These are just some different ways that people have thought about this big story. And maybe you've heard these concepts before. There's something called creationism, which says that the universe was created about 6,000 years ago in 6 days. And species were created as is. A chipmunk was created as a chipmunk, a human as a human, a whale as a whale. And the universe is about 6,000 years old. It takes the Bible in sort of a fundamentalist, literalist way. And if you find fossils in this layer of the Grand Canyon, well, God just put them there. Nature didn't put it there. And when it takes light, like 4.2 years to get to us, God just sort of started it, that whole system, 6,000 years ago. So that's creationism. There's another view that says, that's called intelligent design, that says God may have created the universe in 6 days, 6,000 years ago, or it may have been over billions of years, and evolving life is the way God did it. But either way, there's some kind of intelligence behind it. And that intelligence may be a religious kind of a figure, like a god, Or that intelligence may be kind of a scientific figure, like the force be with you. But there's some kind of intelligence that's guiding it. That's the intelligent design view. The God of the gaps view says what we've learned in the natural sciences explains a lot of things, but there still are a few gaps. One is, how did nothing become something? Now, Stephen Hawking, physicist and mathematician, he says there's always been something. And those who are religious say, no, God made something out of nothing. But then the question is, well, then how did God get there? Another gap is, I alluded to it earlier, how did non-life become life? No one's figured that out. That's quite a gap. A third gap is from single-cell life to multiple-cell life. It took about 3 billion years. Maybe that's where God fits in. And then the fourth gap is, what is consciousness? A number of species seem to have consciousness, including us. What is that? Is it just electrical brain firings? Or is it a soul? Or is it, what is that? And God of the Gaps says, well, that's where God comes in to make those kind of jumps. And then the notion of evolving life that says life kind of bubbles up from below. And you don't really need a God for evolution to work. You don't need a watchmaker for the watch to get made. In evolution, things bubble up from below and change and adapt and move into other forms and so forth. I don't know which of these you kind of feel closest to. I tend to have some kind of a weird combination of these two. I just find fascinating the notion of evolving life. That's just amazing to me. And I don't see any contradiction between our Christian faith and the notion of evolution. But I also think God is in, under, around, and over, and with it, and there. And I don't know really what I mean by that. I really can't defend that. It's a faith statement. But to me, those kind of go together. How about you? Where do you see yourself or other ways of looking at this story? Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting in our lifetime that we've gone from, you know, this very, you know, basic concept of the world around us to one where we have a microscopic appreciation of life, all the way down to these, you know, viruses, these mm-hmm. very tiny entities that, you know, live and thrive, and to, you know, the multiverse.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been within the last 70 years.
Yeah.
And that's powerful. And
yeah.
It's really turning everything upside down for everybody.
It is.
You know, we're really having to ponder things on a whole different level.
Just the invention of the microscope and the telescope, and was that the 1600s? Well, now we were not just limited by our own five senses. But then even, and apparently, while some would say outer space might be infinite, I think there's also a view that inner space might be infinite. So if I had a microscope and looked at something, set that aside, got a more powerful microscope, set that aside, a more powerful one, it would just go on and on and on in inner space. And, yeah.
I was just going to say that in my life, I've noticed that there are people who are comfortable with the idea of the answer being mysterious. You know, mm-hmm. the reconciliation of these ideas is a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are not comfortable with that. And then also, I've at times thought, like, found that the times I've made the biggest mistakes in my life in terms of thinking has been when I felt like there were two explanations and I had to choose.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when I've gotten myself into the most trouble sometimes, was feeling that it was, you know, that it was necessary to choose.
Yeah.
And so I feel like choosing between these theories or trying to reconcile them have a lot more to do with a general approach toward and connection to God than sometimes than the details of them. Because it's a matter of how we hold them both and how much mystery we're comfortable with.
Now, some people would say, as you allude to, that it really doesn't matter what we think about these. And others would say, it sure does matter because it affects the narrative that we're living. And, and we're going to be kind of getting into this on other days in terms of our species. If in creationism, if I've only not been around for 5.5 days of this universe's life, I can see myself as somewhat central. I came on the 6th day. Whereas this says, I'm just a tiny, tiny piece. How does that affect how I live my life? How I see things? Anybody have any other insights into these or any other things that I kind of went through the history of the universe pretty quick?
Well, you were talking about kind of getting infinitely smaller.
Yeah.
We almost assume that life stops at a certain level of size.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't life be way down in the infinitely smaller or infinitely larger? Question. If you do the multiverse thing, maybe one multiverse is in a larger scheme what we call an atom or a neutron or a photon.
Exactly.
And then what's that do to our sense of size and life?
Yeah. I think we've all been schooled in a worldview that sort of puts us as humans at the center or at the top. But I think biologists are learning that cells communicate with each other and have sociability and culture and community, and maybe even down to the physics level. Yeah, most astronomers probably would say, yeah, there must be life all over the universe, but there is a view that a few people hold. That Earth is the only place in the universe that has life, and the rest of the universe is sterile. That doesn't make sense to me. So far, what we've seen with our space probes even has been sterile, but that's just a pretty small area. So, here's your homework for tomorrow. Why do you think these religions came into being so recently? God's been doing stuff for a long, long time. Why so recently? And why do they seem to be about our particular species and addressed to us? That's your homework to think about that. Okay. Let's close with a benediction. Would someone like to take the L part? Okay.
Go in peace into nature and human community.
Hold fast to what is good. Return evil to no one.
Make common cause with those who are oppressed.
Respect the scope of God's creation, always working honorably within nature's multi-layered ecosystems and species diversities.
Cherish life. But don't hoard life.
Above all, love the one who bestows every blessing.
May the peace of God, world maker, pain bearer, and love giver be upon us all.
Amen. Amen.